Brian Hayes and Gordon Miller. James Duffy will join us here momentarily. Josh Lewenberg later in the hour. I see Josh just wrote a piece up on TSN.ca about the Raptors and their plans for the fourth overall pick on Thursday night. And there's a lot of rumors circulating the Raptors. Like Masai's trending online right now, which is meaningless because there's no official announcement one way or the other if he's staying or going. But the fact that there's still some sort of, projection on that. The fact that you're open to a projection means that we're going to do just that. Wonder what the hell's going to happen here with Masai.
What's the best case scenario for the Raptors at the draft?
I think, personally, Mobley drops. I don't see it because I think they could use a five. And, you know, he's a center, he's a star, maybe he's the next DeAndre Ayton, who, I mean, is still a young guy and growing, but Ayton went first overall, we saw what he did with Phoenix. Those are the comparisons I'm reading, is Mobley and Ayton are kind of similar in size and stature and the way that they play, but I don't see him there at four, so I think it'll be one of the two Jalens, more than likely.
Isn't Suggs the best?
It's Suggs or Green, depends on what you're looking for. They're two different styles, they come through, you know, two different programs. Suggs was at Gonzaga. Green went right to the G League as an 18-year-old. So different paths, kind of play a bit of a different style, but both basically guards. I think Green might be able to play the wing a little bit. But I think one of those two guys is likely the pick. But they might be prone to not reaching on a guy, but seeing it differently. I mean, you've been covering drafts forever, Gord. Basing all of your logic on an echo chamber mock draft world never sensible.
Because
it never plays out that way.
You do those rankings, and they're sort of what the consensus is. But the fact is, when you get picked, it's what one team thinks about you.
Exactly.
Like you know, I'm trying. Well, Mark Stahl is an example of this in his draft year. I think he dropped to 12 in his draft year, and it wasn't like everyone thought he was the 12th best player, but. You know, at six, it was him or someone else. At seven, it was him or someone else. At eight, it doesn't mean that you were the 12th best player in your draft. Just who wanted you in that spot? And so I'm with you. I'm excited about Suggs. I think, you know, you kind of pass that torch in a different, you know, different players, but from Lowry to him.
Yep.
You know, I think he's a young guy that's going to have the ball in his hand a lot. That would excite me. As a Raptor fan, that would excite me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think if they hold on to the pick, it's going to be exciting. They haven't been in this spot since 2003 when they took Bosch.
Yeah.
You know, everything I read about these top four players, Cunningham, Mobley, Suggs, Green, as good of a top four as we've seen in a long, long time.
So nice to be in the top four. Great to be in the top four.
The second they got into the top four, it was a win. You knew it.
Yeah.
I personally might simplify it as whichever one's still there, that's the guy we're taking. You know, best player available, and whoever's there at four, it's going to be one of those four guys. But just because everyone in the NBA world is saying those are the four guys doesn't mean that the Raptors will see it that way.
Nope.
You know, they might see a fifth kid who is more compelling, you know, and they believe is the best player available. Not even based on today and going into the games tonight, but what they think that player will be 5 years down the road.
And you have to go with your belief. You can't go with conventional wisdom. It's funny, you know, when you think about drafts, and think about the NHL draft. You know, the Washington Capitals have had both ends of the spectrum over the last 15 years. They've had high picks, and they've had later picks. Now, Ovechkin was a no-brainer. Backstrom was a real good pick. They made some safe picks when they picked in the top 15. They took Brian Sotheby 1 year. They took the defenseman just went to Montreal. I just lost his name. Carl Alsner. They had all, but where they really hit, Brian, was after 20. That's where they got Kuznetsov and Semin and Green and Carlson, and on you went, because they weren't afraid to swing for the fences. Because in that point of the draft, you're like, well, let's take a chance on a guy. Whereas early in the draft, I think a lot of times teams are afraid to make the mistake. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid to make the big mistake because then you look dumb.
Well, and I think I actually will appreciate, and we won't know the answer. We won't know if it's the right decision or not for another 5 years, six years. But I'd appreciate if the Raptors went off the board, quote unquote, because it's not their board. Like, you put together whatever you believe is the best board for you, and whatever you believe is the best player. And if that's some other kid, you know, that isn't named Suggs or Green or Mobley or Cunningham, so be it. You know, show your conviction. Don't. It's easy just to say, I'm going to take this guy and everyone's going to leave us alone, you know. But also, don't overthink it. Because I do think it can go both, it can go both ways in terms of, all right, everyone thinks that way, which means, you know, I'm going to go find the alternative view.
Right. I'm going to be different for the sake of being different.
Different for the sake of being different. I find that happens a lot of times with prospects who are big names early into generally their junior career, if we're using the hockey world, where a guy who's you know, on the scene at 15 and 16, by the time he gets to 18, every scout has seen him 15, 20, 50 times, 100 times, and they're trying to find what he can't do at that point.
There is that, for sure. And the, other problem, Brian, is the NHL draft is 18-year-olds. If the NFL had an 18-year-old draft, Tom Brady might not have been picked.
He was barely picked in a
he was a sixth
draft where they're into their 20s.
Right. So picking 20, you know, now not all NBA draft picks are 22. I mean, they're, you know, 21, 20. They're getting younger all the time. But the point is that predicting 18-year-olds, and to your point, at that age, the physical differences, you know, how much of it is, how many times have we seen a guy get picked high in the NHL draft who was physically more mature than everyone and kind of flatlined?
All the time.
Right. Whereas, yeah, you know,
you're going to develop at your own timeline.
If you saw Erik Karlsson at the World Junior, I was in the same hotel as him at the World Junior in 2009, and I was at his draft. I mean, he weighed 150. Mm-hmm. He looked like one of the kids that runs the picks up to the table.
But it worked out pretty well.
Well, like, you didn't
Mitch
know
what Marner, I remember being there on the floor. Mitch came by. We had a chat with him. Like, this guy, he looks 13 years old.
Right.
And it's worked out pretty well, you know, for Marner and the Leafs.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's natural. Absolutely.
But drafting in the NFL, if your first round pick should at least play that year.
Oh, has to play.
And should.
Just to almost start.
And probably start. Like, at least has to play.
If you're a non-quarterback, especially high-end pick, you got to be playing.
You got to be playing.
A lot.
And probably starting. So, yep. So very different in the NHL, where your first round pick, you might not see him. And probably shouldn't see him for 3 to 4 years. If you're not picking the top
two
or three, you know, you're not going to see that guy for probably, you know, he's going to go back to junior or college for a couple of years. He's going to play a year in the American League.
Well, furthermore, like in the NHL, let alone baseball, but using the NHL and the NFL as comparables, the NHL, you know, you're coming out of a draft. You're ecstatic if two guys make it. If three, it's a grand slam draft. Mm-hmm. You know, three or four picks are never getting into your building. You're not even inviting them to events.
Well, you won't sign them.
You won't sign them. It's okay, we had the pick. We had to take someone. We took you. It didn't work out. Thanks for coming out. The NFL, into the fifth, sixth round, you're drafting guys you think can play for you now. You know, you're maybe taking a guard who you're like, I'm one injury away from this guy starting 10 games in a row.
We think
we can win a Super Bowl.
You can't believe
fifth row. Fifth round.
You can't believe the stories that have happened over the years in the draft where, you know, Craig Button's dad, Jack, was a famous scout. It was chief scout for Washington. Back in the early 80s, they were the dumping ground for the Broad Street Bullies. Old man Snyder would put his arm around Abe Pullman and dump him, Mel Bridgman and Bill Clement and all those guys for picks. And they finally put an end to it. So at the 82 draft, they loved Ronnie Sutter from Lethbridge. And the Flyers jumped up to four and took him. And Jack slammed his hand down on the table and said, you know, I'll find out who the leak is to the Flyers. When I find out, you're done in this game. Take the next guy on our list. Scott Stevens.
Pretty good.
Right? Like, one year Calgary, they loved Randy Moeller. They interviewed him. He just come back from Mexico. Big guy, tan, looked great. Talk, you know, he's a broadcaster now. Talk great. Buffalo took him right before their pick, so they grabbed the scrawny kid who never looked up when they talked to him, didn't say three words. It was Al MacInnis. Like,
everything worked out for the reason it worked out. Right. Yeah. No. And there's a million of those stories, Gordon.
Oh, it's
of we really wanted that guy. We didn't get him. Fine. We'll take this guy. And it turns into an absolute grand slam.
Dallas drafted Joel Lundqvist in 2000 in the third round, I think. And he had, you know, a twin brother. And so, like, the fourth, fifth round, you know, Bob Gainey saying to his scouts, why don't we take the twin brother? You know, it'd be kind of a good story. Nah, we got some other guys. But the seventh round, come on. Like we're drafting high school players. And they said, okay, we'll think about it. And the Rangers grabbed him first. It was Henrik Lundqvist.
Yeah, and the rest is history. And actually, Bob McKenzie just tweeted last hour that he's looking to come back and play.
Think about wanting to come back and play. So I'm assuming there's going to have to be some medical clearances he'll have to go through. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah.
He had a heart condition, right?
Yeah, he had open heart surgery.
Yeah, like that is scary, and that's a lot of recovery time. But and I don't know if there's any history here. Is there any precedence with someone who's gone through something like that and then tried
like
to
open heart surgery?
Their
Chris Pronger, remember he got hit in the chest with a shot and collapsed on the
heart,
ice.
Like, basically stopped.
Yeah,
almost.
Yuri Fisher, I think, came back and played a bit after his episode.
I don't remember him playing again. Maybe
well,
you're
I
right.
I think he tried to come back. I don't know how long he was back.
But like Bollmeister, we're never going to see him again.
Rich Peverly didn't.
No.
Yeah, it's he's an interesting one, Henrik Lundqvist, because you know you talk about Ovechkin. You know, people were critical, or not critical, but asked Lundqvist the question a lot. Why wouldn't you accept the trade out of New York when they sent that letter out and said they're rebuilding it and go chase the Stanley Cup? He'd already won his ultimate prize. He'd won the Olympic gold medal in 06. Mm. Like, for him, he'd love to win the Stanley Cup, don't get me wrong, but for a player like of his from Sweden, the Olympic gold medal was the pinnacle.
Yeah, that's the case for a lot of European players.
There's no Canadian player who would say, I would rather win the Olympic gold medal than the Stanley Cup. You'd like to win both.
Yeah, ideally you'd want both. I think in order to complete your resume, I think you need both.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think anyone's going to ask.
I think the all-time greats need it, especially over the last 35 years.
Do you think if Connor McDavid doesn't win an Olympic gold medal, it's not complete for him? Now, if he doesn't win a Stanley Cup, I think that'll be talked about.
Oh, for sure. But I think like Gretzky in 87, Gretzky to Lemieux. Sid's got his golden goal in 2010 and gold in 14.
No one says Sid's a two-time Olympic gold medalist. They say he's a three-time Stanley Cup champion.
No, well, that comes up. It's a part of the resume, for sure.
Of course it's part of it, but what's the top line?
Probably his Hart trophies and his cups, of course. Yeah. I'm not disputing that, but we're talking about the completion of it. Yeah. And I think the fact that he's got the two golds at the Olympics, specifically the one in Vancouver, it's one of the four or five most famous goals in Canadian history.
Yeah.
And he's got it, and it's his, and... Yeah. It's, you know, I think it's incredibly substantial. I think I've always argued it would just be unfair if McDavid didn't have that opportunity.
That's a big thing, because
I think he deserves. I think every kid deserve that chance if you're at the pinnacle like McDavid is.
I don't know if they're going to China next year. You know, it's still up in the air. They will go to Italy in 2026.
So he'll still be well into his prime. Yeah, likely the captain of that team. Give him a chance to get one. Yeah. I think it'd be, you know. It's further down the pecking order, of course, but if you're in the conversation with Gretzky and Crosby and Lemieux, three greatest Canadians of the last 30 years, and McDavid wants to be there, those three have it. They got the cups too, but they also have the, you know, Canada cups and the gold medals.
I think it's so unfair to judge individual players on team accomplishments. Especially now.
It might be unfair, but I think it's just natural.
It's a 32-team league now. Lots of great players, Brian, are going to retire out of this league and never win the cup and probably not play in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
Like lots of them.
It'll be a shame.
It'll be a shame, but
the greatest of all time have all got it.
Right.
They've all got it.
In a different league, though.
That's right, but they still got it.
Gretzky played a 21-team league when he was winning the Stanley Cups.
Well, Sid played the 30-team. He's got three. Here's James Duthie. JD, you want to jump in on this topic and the idea that...
Right. I just finished doing IT with the boys, so I missed the first half of the topic. I will say this... and one of you may have expressed this, I have always defended on Olympic participation. I have always been go, go, go. You have to go to the Olympics, and have always argued with Bettman in the league when they haven't gone. This is the one time where I'm kind of on the league side, and I know that may have been the point Gord was making before I came on, but I just think after the 2 years that we've had, that it's a reasonable argument that you want to have a normal year and an uninterrupted full season for the sake of the business and everything else, and maybe finish at a reasonable time as well. And it's the one time that I really I'll be happy to follow them and cover it if they go, but I understand if they don't go. And really, in reality, you are going for the players you're talking. You're going for the McDavids and the McKinnons and the younger players from other countries who haven't been, but you're going for essence, you know, maybe 50 players or something, right? Whereas I bet you if you pulled the rest of the players anonymously in the rest of the league, they would say don't go either, and let's just have a normal season. And again, I don't fault the McDavids and McKinnons and all those others for desperately wanting to go, but this is the one time where I would say it would make sense not to go and to go in Italy in 2026.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable argument, and I'm sure that's what Bettman and company are thinking, and all of the owners. But in terms of what it would mean for the completion of McDavid's legacy, I think it's important. I do. Mm-hmm. I think I think it's important because of what I just said. Gretzky had his Canada Cup moments. Crosby's had his Olympic moments. If McDavid is the next one in the lineage, he should have that moment. And I'll bet you he desperately wants it. And not as much as a cup, but I think he desperately wants it, and I think he should.
Well, and you're right about, you know, not getting a cup. It is the ultimate, I don't want to call it a consolation prize because an Olympic gold medal is something, but, you know, look at somebody like, let's say, Roberto Luongo, who never got a chance to win a Stanley Cup, got to a Game 7. But that gold medal, I think, changed, you know, his reputation and somewhat his legacy because of it. So that may be all that a McDavid or a MacKinnon, or on the other side, dare you say it, an Austin Matthews on the U.S. side, maybe that's all they ever get in their career. So it does matter, and I do understand them wanting to go.
Of course it matters, James. I guess my point to Brian before you came on was that I think there's a difference between a European and a Russian player, how they view the Olympic gold medal and the Stanley Cup. I think Europeans and Russians would put the Olympic gold medal probably above the Stanley Cup, whereas North American players, specifically Canadians, would put the Stanley Cup first.
Do you really think they would, though? Do you really think somebody like an Alexander Ovechkin, let's say, maybe before he came over here or in his early years, but after grinding it out, Gord, for, you know, a decade with Washington, do you really think an Olympic gold medal would still have meant more to him than a Stanley Cup? I don't think so.
It's an academic argument now because he's won one, but I can tell you this, like, you got to picture it too. In Russia, they don't, you know, kids don't grow up dreaming of playing in the NHL. It's too far off. It's too much out there. Players over there are viewed based on their performance for the national team. The greatest Russian players are viewed through the lens of the national team. The legends are from the national team. And so, I mean, Ovechkin will talk about, you know, the fact he's won Olympic or World Junior gold, World Championship gold. I saw him a week after the Olympic athletes from Russia won in Pyeongchang. He was happy for them, but you could see it. It'll be for him a major hole in the resume to not win with the national team in the Olympics. He's never won a medal.
I think that's fair that he wants it, but I just think that the world is so much smaller now that these guys who come over here, and once they're embedded in the NHL or if they've played junior here, that you know, that sort of feeling is a little bit older, and that the grind of playing a career and what it takes to win a Stanley Cup over 2 weeks of a 2 week tournament is a little bit different. But certainly you're right, and that's always been the feeling with the world. You see it every time you go over and cover a world championship or whatever, too.
Look how they come over.
It certainly means more.
The minute they're knocked out, they're over there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The minute a Russian's knocked out, almost, they're over there.
Mm-hmm.
It means a lot to play for the national team. We don't have a national team in Canada. We don't play in tournaments. We don't have national team tournaments during the year. We don't have those kind of things. And so it's not right or wrong, but I do think that for a European or a Russian, the Olympic gold medal is the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe consistently over time. I mean, to your point, I mean, Ovechkin's got his now, so we'll see what that means for the Olympics next year and beyond, if he's still even going to be a part of it 4 or 5 years down the road. But he signed his deal today, 5 years at $9.5 million, and we get set for tomorrow, free agent frenzy. Is there a Canadian team in particular that you got your eye on, JD, that you think could be kind of lurking and sneaking around in the weeds, waiting to pounce?
I don't think it's Toronto, which is probably not the best thing to hype the show on your program.
Yeah.
Because okay, there are certainly years it has been Toronto, and I mean, the Tavares year, I think that's probably, if you went back through all our free agent frenzies, the second that Gord cut in and said that John Tavares had signed with Toronto was probably one of the bigger moments that we've had. Unless Kyle Dubas has something quiet up his sleeve, I just don't see that being the case. So I think it would be more, we just did insider trading. Ryan Getzlaff is on the radar for a couple of Canadian teams, Edmonton being at the forefront, and there are some certainly unconfirmed reports out there that he's going to sign with Edmonton. which, of course, he hasn't been permitted to talk to Edmonton yet. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, the biggest farce in all of free agency that no one's supposed to talk to anybody. And then noon happens and 48 deals are announced. But, you know, that even though the funny thing about hockey, the way this works, is quite often, you know, the stories are bigger names who aren't in the impact that they were, right? Ryan Getzlaff's a massive name, but he's not the impact player that he was. He would be a piece that would help a team, perhaps. But I think that's, you know, we get caught up in names and reputations of guys a little bit more that aren't really, you know, they're not star players. They're going to be difference makers to winning a Stanley Cup anymore. I think that happens a lot on free agency day. But those little bits, that I think Edmonton's interesting. Calgary's interesting because I think there's a lot of irons in the fire there. But I don't think Toronto's all that interesting unless something Kyle's been keeping quiet happens.
James, let me take you back 5 years, okay, to July 1st, 2016. Mm-hmm. Milan Lucic, 7 years, $42 million. Kyle Poso, 7 years, $42 million. Andrew Ladd, 7 years, $38.5 million. Louis Erickson, 6 years, $36 million. I think you detect a pattern here. Franz Nielsen, 6 years, $31 million. David Backes, 5 years, $30 million. Troy Brouwer, 4 years, $18 million. You could literally, within two and a half years of that, have any of those players if you were willing to take on the contract.
Well, I would, you know, that's probably, you know, the best example of it. But I bet you if you went through all our free agencies, Gord, you'd have for the big money deals, let's say $5 million plus a year for somebody, that it's probably an 80% failure rate, right?
It's amazing.
But it's those 20% that can make massive differences. So I don't know. I guess it was Berkey's line. He always said that more mistakes are made on this day than any other day of the year. Or maybe he said it for Trade Center. Maybe he says it twice and hopes only people remember the right one. But it's truth. And yet we every year teams get caught up in it somehow. I think there are, you know, I'll say this and then someone will correct me by throwing a bunch of numbers at me. I feel like there are less mistakes now than even 5 years ago that they've had no choice but to get smarter because of the cap situation that they're in, and particularly now where we're headed for a flat cap for probably the next 3 years. You can't afford to make these mistakes anymore, and if you do, it can cripple you for a while. So you look at whatever we say tomorrow, there will be, I'm going to stick by my number, that, you know, 80% of the big name free agents signed will end up being mistakes.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's pretty much exactly what it is.
Which is amazing. I mean, look, and the funny thing is, right before free agency is the buyout period. So you literally walk by the graveyard on your way to the bank to get the money to spend it again.
The best is when it's the same GM. Like Jim Benning, just, nah, I don't like Braden Holtby anymore. You're done. Vertanen, see you later. Literally, Beagle, Erickson, and Roussel were all his signings, and he's still there. So he's just like, we got a lot of brutal contracts here. Who signed those? Jim Benning, that was me. But I'm telling you, this time, I'm going to get it right.
One of my favorite
stories, time it's going to work for
Jim. One of my
Jim
favorite
Benning.
Stories, James, is Ed Snyder, late Ed Snyder in Philadelphia. They had to go to him and say they got to buy out Brizgalov. They're going to buy out like the last, I forget what it was, $45 million of his deal or whatever it was. And Snyder kind of exploded and said, like, well, whose idea was that? And they all kind of looked at each other like, well, that was yours, sir. That was
well,
you, Mr. Snyder. You said
Gord,
get the goalie.
Gord, since it involves you, I'll let you decide if you name the player or not. But there was the one where the guy signed, and it was whatever, $3 million or something like that, 4 years. And you hung up the phone and you said, yeah, $3 million, 4 years. Wait a second. He was talking total, right? Total of $3 million over 4 years? Not $3 million a year. And you had to call your source back. And
it was Jeff Finger.
There was someone in Toronto. It was Jeff Finger.
You know
who you're talking about.
So I got off the phone. I want to say it was a 4 year deal.
Three and a half.
And so I went, okay, so that's like $850 a year. No.
We're going, that's not a bad deal.
$850 a year, that's not bad. There was one where a player got offered a contract, a free agent deal, and he went to his, he was living in that community, and he went back to his old GM and said, hey, you know, this team's offered me, you know, 4 years, $3 million a year. And they're like, hey, good for you, man. Congratulations. Are you going to match it? No, no, no. Heavens no.
Absolutely not. Sign it as quickly as you possibly can.
Well, there's one in my not plugging the book again, listeners or O-Dog, but Pat Morris told one in the book where it was a guy who didn't have something. And, you know, that's the other story. We'll talk about the big names tomorrow, but they're the more fascinating story really is the countless guys out there that are just looking for deals and may not get deals. And the fringe of the NHL, which has increased over the years, the size of the fringe and the players that you may get a deal, you may not get a deal. And Pat Morris had a guy and didn't accept an offer on July 1st, and so it went a few weeks. And there was, you know, he finally got an offer from one GM that was, I don't know, maybe like $800,000 a year. So he, and the guy said, take it, the player. And Pat said, well, let me just go back to this one other guy one time. And he called the GM. The GM was golfing. And he said, look, I got an offer for my guy. You're going to have to match right now or not. And the guy says, well, what is it? And Pat just, you know, he kind of fudged. And he said, well, it starts with a one or something like that. And the guy says, hold on, I got a putt to make. He puts down his phone and he makes the putt and he comes back on and he says, I'll give him 1-6. And it was done, and the guy doubled his salary. So good thing the pot went in.
But, I was going to say, if he lips out there, that guy's
it's crazy.
Apparently, you don't get 1-6.
I can't believe careers are on the line sometimes.
I love it. Oh, I love those stories. I love the fact that GMs, we just assume they're sitting there by the phone. What if they're not? You know, like what if one guy's got a tea time in the morning?
There are some GMs who've just said, you know what, I'm out. Like we're not buying today.
Not
like,
doing anything.
We're not
see
buying.
You later.
Our team's set. Like there's a number of teams are set, right? They have no room. They're not looking for players.
Well, we'll see tomorrow. We're making a compelling case for all of the coverage tomorrow. We cannot wait for it. It's going to be very fun. Starting at 11 a.m., JD, you'll be all over it. Gord, you'll be in there. I'll be in there. Everyone's going to be in there.
Right.
I will say this, and I do mean this. Free Agent Frenzy is way better than Trade Center.
It is
every single year. Yeah. Like Trade Center, we could have tumbleweeds the entire day. Free Agent Frenzy, there is always action. There is always stuff that raises eyebrows. And so that's a legit, that's not a hype, that's a legit plug.
And people can't wait to tell you. Like trade deadline is like trying to pry a box open. Like Free Agent Frenzy is like our phones are ringing off the hook. They can't wait to tell you.
Hey, we'll give you the info. You can't believe what my guy just got.
Right.
All right. Well, it starts tomorrow at 11 a.m. We look forward to it. We'll see you down there. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, boys.
There's James Duthie, our TSN hockey host. And TSN 1050's Free Agent Frenzy coverage is presented in part by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Big week for the NHL. Big week for the NBA. You know, the Detroit Pistons are on the clock as of Thursday night. Free agency right around the corner. Josh Leuenberg, our Raptors reporter, will join us to set the scene on the draft about 48 hours away. These rumors about Ben Simmons and the Raptors, what he makes of it all. That more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 in on TSN 2. Masai is trending on Twitter, and I don't think there's any reason for it. It happens, like every 24 to 48 hours.
It's like you trend on Twitter, and I know. I wake up in the morning, you're trending on Twitter, I know something's happened.
Yeah, I've maybe said something provocative or, I don't know, goofed on O to an extent that was uncalled for, and it started trending, and people didn't like that. Rarely is it a positive trend. If my name's trending, I don't know if it's going to be positive.
I can tell you firsthand, as someone who has been in that situation several times lately, it can be a little nerve-wracking.
It can be a little nerve-wracking, but it's all right. It means you're out there. That's a good thing. And here's Josh Leuenberg, a Raptors reporter. The reason I mentioned Masai trending, that would be your job pretty much to a T, right, Josh? Like, you got to figure that kind of stuff out. How often have you just been searching the algorithms of Twitter trying to find out why Masai happens to be trending today compared to why he was trending yesterday or the day before that?
Yeah, he's been trending for the better part of the last year, so I'm not sure there's any rhyme or reason to it. I mean, the Raptors released an NFT. I'm still not quite sure what that is, but they've released an NFT, and people assume that the key, the little tease that they released on Twitter with the key, people assume that had something to do with Masai. So at this point, I think whatever happens or doesn't happen will somehow be connected back to Masai.
Yeah, it's going to be consistent until he either signs or walks, and we don't have an answer on that, but We do know that they're going to be on the clock, fourth overall as of Thursday night, if they hold on to the pick. You just wrote a piece. It's up on TSN.ca. And the title of it is that the fourth overall pick for the Raptors is not necessarily cut and dry, even though based on the mock draft world, it should be. It's either Suggs, Green, Mobley, or Cunningham, whoever's sitting there at four. Why is it not that cut and dry?
Yeah, theoretically, it should be an easy decision because I don't even think they'll have the option of drafting a Jalen Green or an Evan Mobley unless somehow they move up in this draft. I think at this point, we've heard rumblings over the last few days about Detroit being indecisive, but Cade Cunningham is going to go number one, and it seems almost certain that Green and Mobley are going to follow. So I do think this comes down to, do you take the guy that's left of that top four, the preordained top four, because you're right, that's sort of what it's been over the last few months, is four guys in this draft and then everybody else. So you think the Raptors ending up at four, it's an easy decision, but it's never that easy, right? I think Jalen Suggs is a really good player, but if you're the Raptors, you're looking at some of these other guys who have to be intriguing for a few reasons. One, because the Raptors have never subscribed to that idea that you've got your draft board and you have to follow it, the conventional way of thinking with draft projections. They've always gone against that and done their own thing. But then also, when you look at the players that they could potentially go off the board for, I mean, these are very Raptors-y prospects. Scotty Barnes is the one that stands out most. And I do think, one, his upside is super high. And two, he has a lot of those qualities that the Raptors, that Masai Ujiri specifically, really likes, always looks for, and they've had success with, obviously, with guys like Siakam and Ananobi, these long, rangy, athletic forwards that can defend every position on the court. And let's not forget that Masai Ujiri has never let go of the fact that they missed out just narrowly on Giannis Antetokounmpo. They had him targeted. They tried to move into that 2013 draft and couldn't. So maybe they look at this and say, if everything goes according to plan, they might not be in this type of position drafting in the top five for a very long time. This is a unique opportunity to potentially grab one of those coveted forwards that are so hard to find in the NBA these days. But they could look at it the other way around, too, and say, okay, well, this is a situation they're not going to be back in. They can't screw it up. And I would say that Jalen Suggs, not only is he the safest player that's likely to be available there, outside of Cunningham, he's probably the safest player in this draft. And just because he has a high floor doesn't mean he has a low ceiling. I think he's a really good player as well. So I do think it's a tougher decision for them than people probably expected when they got that fourth overall pick.
Josh, how much of this do you think is driven by immediate need, and how much of it will be looking down the horizon? I mean, you've got Fred VanVleet. You know, I mean, how much are you thinking about next year with this pick, and how much are you thinking about 4 years from now?
It's a good question, Gordon. I think that's usually the question here when it comes to draft time, especially when you're up at the top of the draft. The Raptors are a team that they always say they're not drafting for need. They're drafting best player available. But as we know, I mean, best player available is sort of a subjective thing, evaluating these prospects. It's not an exact science. The best player available to one team is going to be different for the other team. And then it also comes down to, okay, well, maybe you think Jalen Suggs is the best player available right now, but maybe you think Barnes is going to be the best player available in 3 years from now. So what do you value most? It gets a little bit complicated, too, with the Raptors when you think of who they have under contract and also the uncertainty of the Kyle Lowry situation. I mean, it seems reasonably likely that Lowry's historic tenure with the Raptors is nearing its end, although we've said that before. He's going to be highly coveted when he gets free agency a few days after the draft. So maybe Suggs is your successor there, but if you draft Suggs, and let's say Lowry does come back, you also have Fred VanVleet, you also have Malachi Flynn under contract. That's a crowded backcourt, but I will also say, just based on the idea of best player available, this is a Raptors team that's coming off of their worst season in a decade. They've now got this fourth overall pick, the highest pick they've had since 2006. They've only got four players under guaranteed contract for next year. They're not in a spot to be drafting for positional need. I think they desperately need to, again, they desperately need to get this right, and I think they need to take the best player available, whoever they believe that is.
with Josh Lewenberg, our TSN 1050 Raptors reporter. The Raps are, again, picking fourth on Thursday night. The NBA draft just over 48 hours away. So the rumors are flying in the NBA, and you know the levy's going to break here at some point. Ben Simmons is available out of Philly. We have to believe he's going to get flipped somewhere. And there have been a lot of reputable reporters saying that the Raptors are interested, and maybe more so than just kicking tires, like legitimately deep into this. There is a report about the offer that Morey and company were looking for that seems just outrageously lopsided. I mean, I'm not personally a big Simmons fan. I think what he just showed in the playoffs, the fourth quarter shooting, and how adverse he was to doing it, that would terrify me. I'm not sure where with Masai and Webster. We'll see. But Van Vliet, Ananobi, the fourth pick plus, I mean, that's ridiculous. But what is Simmons? How would you classify him, Josh? Because we know superstars in this league, it costs you a lot of capital. Is he a legit bona fide superstar, or is he still somewhat of a project with a ton of assets that, if it all connects, could or will become a superstar?
Are you sure you don't want anything else? Philadelphia, maybe take a few extra picks.
No kidding.
The CN Tower?
You can have the championship banner as well. Yeah, that looks a lot like the offers that I get from the grappler in fantasy football.
Right.
It's a lot, and it's obviously not going to happen. So clearly, Philadelphia doesn't think that Ben Simmons' trade value has changed much since that series against Atlanta. I mean, I never subscribe to that narrative that his trade value has tanked. Like, there are still teams, a lot of teams in the NBA, who would really want this guy. I think teams probably like the idea that, okay, well, maybe you can sneak in here with a low ball offer. But I don't think that's going to happen either. This is still a player, an all-NBA player, all-NBA defender that just turned 25 years old. Yeah, the shot is an issue. Some of the confidence issues are a concern as well. But if there are some teams that are worried about that, I can promise you the Raptors aren't one of them. There aren't many teams in the NBA that have as much confidence in their player development system as the Raptors, especially when it comes to shooting. And they should be confident because the results are there. The track record is there. They turned Siakam from a non-shooter into an average shooter, and they turned Ananobi from a non-shooter into a near elite shooter. He's a 40% three-point shooter. So they've proven they can do it, and there's a whole lot of talent to work with when it comes to Ben Simmons. So I'm not surprised at all to hear that they're interested. I think that the interest is legitimate. I think that it's serious. But then the question, of course, is at what price? I would be really surprised if the Raptors were willing to give up any of their core three, OG, Fred, and Pascal, for Ben Simmons. So then it comes down to, can you make something work with the other pieces? Philadelphia is one of the many Kyle Lowry suitors, and Philadelphia is one of those teams that they're not going to be able to offer him the kind of money that he wants, and they would need the Raptors' help in a sign and trade. But even in a sign and trade, that doesn't mean that they have to include Ben Simmons. So are they interested in the fourth overall pick? Would the Raptors include it? And at that point, it wouldn't be the fourth overall pick. It would be a player, whether it's Suggs or Burns or whoever, because that deal would have to be made after the draft. You can't sign and trade Lowry now. So it's complicated. And I'm not sure if there's anything there that makes sense for both the Raptors and for Philadelphia, but I'm not surprised that the Raptors are at minimum kicking the tires on this. Because as we know, Masai Ujiri and this Raptors front office, They're superstar hunting. They want that star. And if they can't get one, if they don't believe that they can get one with the fourth overall pick, then they're going to try and use that and whatever else to try and find one in the trade market, because they haven't had success luring somebody in free agency.
No, they have to rely on the trade market. There's no denying that. And even the draft is such a crapshoot. And it can take a long time to develop, you know, and that's another thing. Like, let's say it takes Suggs, and at some point he turns into a perennial all-star and a guy that maybe, you know, is an all-NBA guy. That's probably 4 or 5 years down the road. So is Masai and Bobby and Emelisi, are they willing to wait for that? Is that a part of the plan? That has not been consistent with the way they've operated since they got here, Masai in particular. You're right? Like, it was, let's go at it, let's get after it, let's keep our pieces, let's improve, chip away. So I'm not surprised, and I wouldn't be surprised if that fourth pick were to be available. But I think you got to use the capital properly. And I just don't know if Simmons is that guy, Josh. Like, that's my concern. I hear what you're saying about Siakam and Ananobi. That was more technical. this feels like a mental block.
Yeah.
He's afraid to shoot. I don't know. How do you fix that? Like, what is this program going to bring to the table where Ben Simmons is all of a sudden willing to shoot 7-8 times in the fourth quarter of the biggest games?
Yeah, and I think that principle, that idea of not being afraid of basically reworking somebody's shot, both physically and maybe mentally as well, it could come into play with this draft. And that's sort of something that I wrote about here as well, where you've got two really intriguing prospects in Barnes, who we, as well as Jonathan Kuminga, who, I mean, if Barnes is one of the biggest risers in this draft, Kuminga is one of the biggest fallers. At one point, it looked like he could be in that top tier of prospects. But the one thing that's separating those guys from being in that top tier is shooting. So I think we're going to get some answers here in terms of how the Raptors plan on approaching these next few years with what they do. I mean, obviously with what they do over the next couple weeks, because this is a really big time for the franchise, but even with what they do in the draft, because you mentioned one draft is a bit of a crapshoot, and even with a player like Suggs, who I think is one of the most NBA-ready prospects in this draft, it could take some time, but I think it'll take even more time with the guys that you basically have to teach how to shoot in Barnes and Kuminga. So,
yeah.
So are they drafting somebody like Suggs who you can sort of plug in now and say, okay, well, we're keeping this competitive window open, or are they really looking ahead to the future? And I think what they do in terms of trying to package these assets for a trade or in a trade could be telling as well. It's something that we talked about, Brian, when I was in studio a few weeks ago, where you're collecting these assets and you're putting yourself in a position to swing for the fences with one of these superstar players. But at some point, you've got to do something, right? I think they're still early in that process, but the alternative is you wind up like Boston. I mean, they're not in a terrible spot, but remember all those years they had all those picks, all those assets, and they kept saying, well, we're going to wait for the next guy. We're going to wait for the next guy. And that next guy never came. They never made that big trade. So at some point, you have to cash in your chips.
Well, we'll see what happens over the next couple of days, couple of weeks. It's going to be a wild scene in the NBA. It always is this time of year. We look forward to seeing how you cover it, as always. And thank you for doing this, Josh. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
Josh Leuenberger, a TSN Raptors reporter. We'll come back and tee up game two of the series down at Fenway. The Jays with Robbie Ray on the mound tonight. He's got to go five. Ideally, he goes 7-8. I love how we live in a world now where the idea of him throwing a complete game is just an impossibility.
Like Bob Gibson, didn't Bob Gibson have like 29 complete games one year or something? Like,
oh, I'm sure he did. I saw the stat line for old Haas Radburn.
Yeah.
In like 1893. He threw like 600 innings or something. Like, that's what we need.
Well,
we need some old Haas Radburn.
But you know what, though? It's funny you say that because look at goalies, right? I mean, when did it become out of the question that a goalie could play back-to-back nights?
No, it's illegal now. You're not allowed to do that.
You can't possibly do that.
No, it's in the CBA. You can't do it. So we'll get to that more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Robbie Ray pitching a gem in that park.
I think the Jays win a close one.
Oh, so the bullpen holds up? Well, is that what you're telling
7-6.
Me? 7-6. Yeah, 7-6.
I didn't say it would be a low-scoring game.
No,
by the way, Bob Gibson, 28 complete games back-to-back years.
Okay, well, let me top that with old Haas Radburn, okay? So yeah. Old Haas, in the 1884 season, he threw 678 innings. 678.
How many games?
Well, he pitched in, what do you have, 72 games? 72 starts?
Oh,
yeah, no, 73.
Wow.
Yeah, 73, and he had 73 complete games. He never got pulled. He's Charlie Montoya's dream. He's exactly what the Jays need.
The major league leader this year is Germán Márquez from Colorado. He has three.
Yeah, old Haas rolling in his grave. Do you know what his ERA was that year, old Haas, when he threw 678
0.75
innings?
0.75 or something?
1.38. So he never gave up any runs. He never got pulled from the game.
Wow.
He's everything they need. If Shapiro and Atkins don't at least sniff around
old
Haas Radburn, he should be run out of
town. Bob Gibson, three complete games in the 67 World Series and hit a home run.
Well, whatever.
Hey, listen, I'm going to do the thing tomorrow, Free Agent Frenzy. I'm taking off for a couple of weeks. So will things happen while I'm gone? Because it always happens.
I hope so.
See, when you're gone.
I know. I'm off next week. So, yes.
Things
to answer your question, yes. Next week, Bedlam. Masai signs or leaves next week, I guarantee it. All right, buddy. I'll see you down there tomorrow, though.
Sounds good.
There he is, Gordon Miller. I will be back tomorrow from the studio. In studio, Noodles will be riding shotgun as well. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.